Cheers, everyone. Welcome to PWT Talks NXT. I am your host, Kelly Wells. You can find me on Twitter at Spooky Milk. Thank you for those of you who have pledged to the game that I'm creating on Kickstarter. We are pledged. We are 100%. My game is called Fun Dead, the Gravest Show on Earth. We are more than 100%. Last week, Justin gave away, he pledged to get the game and to get the likeness of one of our listeners drawn in. And that was Chris Fielder, baby. He got drawn into our game. He will be. That'll happen. And I just wanted to thank everybody who was on board. You can still pre-order that game if you want to on Kickstarter. But let's get to the show. Actually, not a lot to talk about. Normally, I would say that here. There weren't a lot of segments on this show. And in keeping with that, we've only got a two-man booth this week. Obviously, Harley continues to do the Mae Young Classic. For the last couple of weeks now, that is going to be airing. And Tom is off, surrounded by kids, his own, and, you know, not in a place where he can record tonight. So it's just going to be me in the blue corner. And in the red corner, we have Justin James.
Hi, I'm Justin underscore M underscore Gems underscore James. And the truth is that, you know, as the current holder of the $1 million title, I had Virgil take out Tom.
Right.
He's currently cleaning the pool while the kids watch on and ask when it's going to be open again.
Yep. Tom was trying to dribble the ball five times, and of course, Justin knocked it out from under him.
To be fair, though, I didn't have to. Tom can't dribble.
Tom just couldn't dribble. He's got no game. He's not the star of the court. So that's what we got. You can email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. We have five emails this week. One of them is from our guy, Tom Staupe. You thought that not having him on the show meant that he wasn't going to talk? Oh, no. He sent in his thoughts, but they're fairly brief. They're brief for Tom. So it's going to be us. It's going to be us two talking about this show. Last week, we did this show in chronological order, and, you know, I didn't totally hate it, so I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to do it again. So you're going to have to wait to find out if we liked the main event. Don't want to spoil that for you. So you'll find out at the end of the show whether we liked the Triple Threat main event. So we're going to go ahead and start with the Tommaso Ciampa, Velveteen Dream, and Nikki Cross opening segment. I'm going to read part of Tom's email here, actually, right on the top, just because I think it's kind of interesting and funny. And then we're going to get to that. So Tom said, I was surprised in the past weeks to see how much Nikki's secret was prefaced. Her interruption here was the first time we in the live crowd heard of it, thus rendering her interruption here that much more of a shocking collision of worlds. Maybe you guys would be able to tell me whether you feel the advanced teases have helped, or if you feel this would have been a better reveal. I will also gladly admit to having started that triple threat chant, even if it paled in comparison to Ciampa's incredible tough enough burn. Okay, so, interesting that this is where Tom first heard about Nikki knowing, and I suppose that makes sense since these were all in backstage segments. I think that the better reveal, of course, would have been for us to find out on this show as well, to find out on this episode. But on the other hand, they had to know that they were just treading water and these segments were very silly and it felt like it was directionless. And if they gave us these moments leading up to this episode, then it wouldn't seem like it was so out of left field. It wouldn't seem so patched together. So my feeling is they went with the lesser of two evils, which was to kind of give away a couple of things and in that sense, they sort of made it seem like there was a more cohesive story going on here. And as far as what she knows, we still don't know. I thought it was kind of a cheat for her to talk about the fact that she knows. She said this to Ciampa, she said it to Dream, and she said it to Cassius. So we still don't know exactly what she knows. We just know that she knows what they did. What did you think of this whole segment, Justin?
I loved it until Nikki Cross's music hit. Part of the problem is that when her music hit, I said to myself, is Eric Young trying to put himself in this match? I was like, no. That's Nikki Cross's music. Never mind.
right.
And then the crowd started saying Triple Threat, and I was like, they could be going this direction, but they're not.
No.
Especially after Triple H said earlier this week or late last week that intergender matches were shock value only.
One of my favorite matches I've seen at a live show was an intergender match between Chuck Taylor and Candice LeRae. And I know I've talked about that on
you
the
have.
Show because
you
I
have.
Saw it in January. But it was tons of fun, and it was not shocking, like, at all. Like, everyone bought
into it. It's not my fault that you're used to watching women get beat up then.
Oh, my gosh. She mostly beat him up. It was not shocking to see this.
Yeah, no, I can see that. And Candice LeRae is a great talent. She really is. So I just got totally derailed by this intergender thing.
yeah, that's where we kind of got lost already.
And I'm thinking about, like, Candice LeRae getting into this match and beating up Tommaso Ciampa, which, honestly, that's the direction I could have seen this. Like Candice LeRae, if there was going to be a woman in a triple threat match involving Tommaso Ciampa, Candice LeRae should have been it, and it should have been, like, 3 months ago.
Right.
Or have, like, Gargano and Black. Or Gargano and LeRae against Ciampa. But yeah, Nikki Cross took this thing off the hinges. This whole whodunit it's going on too long. There's just not enough progression, right? We spent, what, 3-4 weeks just seeing William Regal wearing the exact same clothing and his fake Michael Avenatti wearing the exact same clothing for, like, 4 weeks trying to find out, you know, interviewing people, and it's cool that they use it to springboard so many storylines, but the pacing is just horrendous.
Well, and it makes no sense either that you had Nikki come out and say she knows and, like, say it to the audience, and then you didn't have a follow-up on the very same episode. She literally announced it at the beginning of the episode, and then they had no follow-up during the show, which is asinine when you're considering that this is, like, their supposedly their number one priority. Like, obviously they would pay this off. If they had done it at the end of the show, I wouldn't feel like it was a cheat, because then it was like, oh, cliffhanger. I can deal with a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
She did it at the beginning of the show.
Yeah, it's like Chekhov's gun failed to fire. And on top of that, I know that the Nikki Cross thing was more than this one segment. But it's like, at this point, I'm like, I don't know what she knows or whatever, but she's saying, like, I mean, maybe she's talking about something else entirely. Maybe they're all making out in the parking lot or something. I don't know.
Yeah, and I was thinking as they –
that'd be quite the storyline, by the way.
That would be – yes, the three of them. Like, what would they – I love to think about them doing stupid things like that, but yeah, you know, ruin all their careers, whatever. So I was just thinking this would be a really interesting and fun way to start – a faction, but then you think of these three guys, Ciampa, who wouldn't be in a faction, Dream, who wouldn't be in a faction, and then Ono, who maybe would, but it's ruined by the fact that the other two wouldn't. So maybe Ono sucks up to one of these guys and works as kind of their diesel. Like, I can see him doing that for either one, being diesel to their Shawn Michaels. I can see that working for him as a storyline to keep him somewhat relevant and perhaps give him a springboard for later if he wants to turn face again against
he
that
is
guy.
Face. Face right now. He's working
is
face.
Is he? I don't know.
Yeah. The thing with Dream.
I'm just – right.
The thing with Dream is that his face status is as ambiguous as his character sexuality, right? Like, that's – he's ambiguosity – personified. Like, he is whatever the matchup requires him to be.
Well, I was talking Ono just then. Have him be the diesel to the Shawn Michaels, just to be there, to be the second in the corner and things like that, to be the muscle when that person doesn't want to get their hands dirty. And Velveteen Dream is exactly the kind of Shawn Michaels, Rick Martel kind of character who I can see having that person in his corner who would be kind of
I got that backwards. I was saying that you're going to have Dream be somebody's
Dream
muscle.
Dream would not get his hands dirty like that.
And not only that, but that would involve him standing behind somebody else and backing them up. Like, he cannot be.
He wouldn't do that.
He's worse than me.
Yep. So I think there are options here. And I dare say that as weird as this whole episode was, as far as that goes, it did make me more interested to see what I'm more interested in the Black Saga than I was last week. I'll say that.
Yeah. I am too, but they're at such risk with me now.
Yeah, it's at least we know that it's not going to end up with Vince McMahon ripping off his mask and saying it was me, Austin. It was me. So it's going to be better than that.
Well, you get to see somebody seeing Triple H with the bedpan.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. So it's I liked the segment. I thought there was some good lines. Nikki is Nikki. And I think that she's doing decently with what she's giving. It's definitely overacting, and it's definitely I feel for a couple of the guys who we got two emails about the opening segment, so I'm gonna go ahead and read both of those.
We get two emails about the Nikki Cross segment of the week every time she's in a segment. And both his emails say the exact same thing. And look, to the folks who emailed us about this, like, please don't think I'm knocking you. I am not knocking you. Like we love your emails, and
yeah,
I totally agree here.
This is a statement on Nikki Cross.
On Nikki Cross, not our listeners who email us, even the ones who email us this week after week, because every week this comes up, we have the same conversation. We talk about it again, right? And we say the exact same things. And it's just a clear sign of a problem that they have. I mean, it was like I said in the chat. I'm like, you've got this person who's supposed to be totally crazy, yet she's magically able to pose for the hard camera just right. I mean, none of it worked for me. It's overacting. It's over-emoting. And this is professional wrestling, which is not exactly high art most of the time, though it can reach that status. But she is like – obviously somebody's telling her to do this because it's getting worse and worse. Like they told her – they told her, well, turn it up to 11. No. Turn it up to 90.
Right. Okay. So Chris Fielder says
– baby.
Yep. We'll get there. Hey, guys. Just got a few things. Although we've all felt that Tommaso Ciampa and Velveteen Dream were in two completely different worlds characteristically, I personally thought they did really well together tonight. They seemed to have pretty good chemistry and meshed well together, at least when it comes to talking. The segment did its job in making me super excited to see these two duke it out in the ring. I thought it kind of did take a turn for the worse when resident Twisted Sister of NXT came out, though. Her craziness, in my opinion, is beginning to be a little over the top. I know that may be the understatement of the year, but I was on board up until recently. My question is, with these two going back and forth tonight, do you think we will see a one-on-one match between them, and when do you think it may happen? Or do you think we will get a three-way with Ciampa Dream and a returning Aleister Black? Also, with Nikki being as crazy as she's being portrayed, who in their right mind would take anything she says seriously? I know it's a wrestling storyline, but it makes no sense to me. What are your thoughts, guys? If Aleister is coming back for War Games, then I think this will be a triple threat. I don't know how it wouldn't be. I don't know then what you do with Johnny, though, unless Johnny is going to go in the War Games match itself. I don't know, which for me is very exciting, because I don't like being able to kind of, even this far out, or even this close, be able to call that all out. I like being surprised every week just a little bit more.
I'm starting a fantasy book inside my head as you talk.
Yeah, right. And we can all do that. And that's what's fun about this. And that's what I'm
trying to do. But not as good
too.
As me.
Oh, please. And so, I think that Aleister probably joins this match if for no other reason than Dream versus, Dream versus Ciampa is a very odd singles matchup. Now, as the other guys brought up earlier, you don't have to use this ostensible heel-heel matchup. I know that Dream is working closer to face than he has in the past, but he's still a prick, and he's still, I think, officially a heel.
But he's ours.
But he is ours, yes. So I think that they can make this match easier to sell if they've got an actual face in there. And I don't remember if it was you or if it was Tom last week or the week before who said, well, it doesn't matter because they got War Games to sell that. They don't need any championship matches, period, let alone one that is the typical face heel kind of thing. So that's why your question, Chris, is so hard to answer. I don't know if they're going to go the triple threat mode or not. I feel like triple threat is likely as long as Alistair's coming back. Although this was all shot a few weeks ago, and so
yes, this is exactly where I was going to go with this.
Yes, so they don't
you
know.
You just don't know when they shot. So they're setting up a match that will work, right? Because nobody's going to reject Dream and Ciampa.
Yep.
Anybody who rejects it is not an intelligent person, and I believe that they have a severe ignorance about wrestling and the world in general. And they should probably go put cream cheese in their jalapeno poppers and not cheddar cheese.
Wow. That got serious.
Because cream cheese and jalapeno poppers is on the same level of bad. And I just look at it, I'm like, you know what? They can do this. If Black is ready to go, they can insert him into the match when they know for sure. And nobody's going to be angry.
Yep.
Even the people who put cream cheese in their jalapeno poppers instead of cheddar, even they will not be upset at getting Dream, Black, Ciampa. And so we're good to go there. That makes perfect sense, and that's exactly why I think they're going this route.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other pro wrestling media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at PWBoom.com. Once again, that's PWBoom.com.
All right, an email from Paul Leonard. My thoughts on Nikki Cross are known by now, but just to sum it up, love the wrestler, hating the crazy gimmick more and more. Now, with the way they made it look like Nikki could fight either Dream or Ciampa, they are teasing that it could have been a female that attacked Black? Because honestly, I've started to come around to the theory that has been going around that it's Candace that did it. I will say this, though. Everyone does seem to have a guilty look whenever Nikki says, I know what you did. So maybe the entire roster did it. That would be, what is that, 12 Little Indians? Is that the movie where they do that? Yes, there is. I think that's what it is. It's Murder on the Orient Express. So, spoiler alert. Another thought. I was at a
Thanks,
show last week.
I never
week.
Saw it.
I've seen both of them. And, yeah.
Neither, I haven't thought. Seen either, but now I don't need to. Thank you.
I was at a show last week, and they did an elimination triple threat. Tonight made me wish NXT would do something like that. I can't see the main roster ever trying it, but I can see NXT willing to give it a try. Can you imagine the uneasy alliance between Cole and Dunn as they decide to take out Ricochet first to make sure there is a new champ? It seems a lot of triple threats end up following the same formula, but the elimination style would make it feel completely different. What are your thoughts? While we didn't have a big women's presence on this show, I would have been wondering which NXT women do you think we'll see at Evolution outside of the two already confirmed? I figure Cross and Belair in some capacity, since supposedly they want 50 women on the show or something. Anyone else you can see? I will say that 50 is a lot, but I'd love to see Cross and Belair on the show. I think Belair is a must-have. I don't think that you have a show like Evolution without having her. She's just too good. As far as elimination triple threats, I love them. I love elimination matches because it forces the bookers to be more creative. With a triple threat, with anything that is sudden death, it allows them to protect everyone, including the person being pinned, which is, I get it from a booking standpoint. I know why it's done. But that's why you don't see a lot of elimination matches, because somebody's got to be the first to go, and nobody wants to be that, and they don't want anyone to have to be that. And so when they have a triple threat where it just ends when one pinfall happens, it's just Protection City. So that's why it happens. I will say that I've seen one of my favorite matches I ever saw live was actually a triple threat elimination match between the Hardy Boys, the Dudley Boys, and Edge and Christian. And so, that's not surprising that that was a really good match. But yeah, it was tons of fun. Dudley Boys won it, by the way, if anyone cares. That was back in 99. But yeah, triple threat matches where there are elimination rules, doesn't matter if you have them on house shows and things like that. So we did see one at WrestleMania 2000. That one was a four-way. That was the McMahon in every corner match, if you go back that far as a fan. It had Big Show and Mick Foley. They were basically just add-ons. Mick Foley had been retired a month and a half earlier, but they had him come back for that match. And Big Show and Mick, you knew they were going to go first and that this was going to be the issue between Rock and Triple H that came to a head. It was always just going to be Rock and Triple H, but honestly, I think it was made more to have a McMahon in every corner than to do than anything to do with Big Show or with
Mick. Like that was the real gimmick. That was the real thing. They just wanted McMahon in every corner, and then they said, "Who can we throw in the match?
Right.
Haven't I fired on TV?"
That was the Attitude Era, gang. And for those of you who missed it, I consider you lucky. There were some good things, but man, there was some really. We saw a lot of McMahon hours of television in those days. I dig what you're saying, but I also know why they don't do it. Any extra thoughts on that, Justin?
I'll say that seeing a match like that, that format, like once in a blue moon, if there's a very special reason for it, like especially if we've seen the same three guys in the ring, like if they there was a triple threat combination, I think we saw like a couple times too many recently. I can't remember what it was because it flushed itself from my memory. Anything involving Tyler Bate and Pete Dunne.
Okay.
Right. We've seen those two in the ring so many times in so many different forms.
Yeah, mostly, yeah, tag matches of late, and we've seen them on other sides, and we saw Mustache Mountain and Undisputed,
yeah,
a lot too. So
yeah, so it's like anything involving like Tyler Bate and Undisputed Era, or Tyler Bate and Pete Dunne and Trent Seven, I'd definitely be in favor of that format or something, just to change up and give some variety and give it some new dimensions.
Right. All right, let's go to the first match, Keith Lee versus Kona Reeves. Basically an enhancement match for Keith Lee on his way up. I felt like this was more a personality showcase than anything, which NXT does sometimes, as guys are kind of figuring out the way they're going to go. I didn't mind this. I know that you kind of minded it, but I actually didn't mind this at all. I thought that lengthwise it was fine. It got across Keith Lee a little better. I think this did more for Keith Lee as a babyface than any of his promos have, because his promos are
yes.
like borderline heelish. But I thought this match did wonders for him, because Kona's doing a pretty good job at being really snotty, and I think is... I think fulfilling a decent enough role, and I have no idea if they're going to have any plans for him, but I do enjoy him for the most part. So middling match, I suppose. Fine, but Lee looked crisp in what he was doing. They weren't asking for any of the real super huge high spots. I know that some of that will be saved, but I thought, I thought the match was clean enough and decent enough for being the only other match on the show that was basically a one-match show. Anything on this one?
Okay, now I'm going to say something. And before I say it, I just want to put out there, I truly hope that my current living address is not public on the internet, because people are going to be showing up at my door with torches.
Okay.
Keith Lee is becoming the John Cena of NXT.
Okay.
He spends his entire match getting beat up by somebody who couldn't get 10 seconds of offense against any other face character. He has this snotty smugness about him that even though he's presented as a babyface, you still want to punch him. And then he wins the match with a move that's a fireman's carry into dropping somebody on the ground. Oh, after hitting a single shoulder block.
Yeah.
He put on a John Cena match. Like, John Cena could get in the ring against Leo Rush, and you're going to see the match we just saw. 3.5 minutes of John Cena selling for Leo Rush, and then hitting the five moves of Doom, and then hopefully not followed by the sixth one.
Yeah. Well, Leo Rush that sixth is one's awesome, ridiculous. And that would not make me sad.
Okay, fine. Raul Mendoza then. Baby and Ike here.
Those guys have not won on TV. You know, I think they're still on the payroll. I don't know.
I'm sure they are. I was shocked when R-Truth showed up. I was like, he's still there? Like, I haven't seen him. He hasn't been on TV in like a year and a half. But yeah, like John Cena against Primo, this would be the match, what we just saw.
Yeah, and I guess that's, you know, on one hand, you want to say, look at Cena putting that guy over. But I think he has to sell a lot because they know he's going to win almost everything. So
the only thing John Cena won't sell is beer to a kid.
Right.
And Keith Lee is quickly heading into that territory. Yeah. Of just selling everybody's offense and then hitting three moves and winning the match. And it's like, dude, for a guy who comes out and sniffs the air like his own sweat smells like, you know, honey butter, you should be taking a lot less offense from Kona Reeves.
Yeah, and Kona's been promoted weirdly because he was dominating guys for a short time.
Two matches, three matches, yeah.
A few, and yeah. And then they had him lose to EC3, who has not won since. Oh my goodness.
Oh my God. Is that what it is? Is beating Kona Reeves the end of your push? Keith Lee's about to go on a losing streak.
the Kona touch of death is that you might beat him, but like you're done afterwards.
Yeah. You pin Kona and the stink transitions to you.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. So they got this one out of the way, and I'll be more interested to see when Keith Lee does a long match with one of the guys who really is being presented as a longer term threat. So
yeah, this whole Keith Lee thing is just rubbing me wrong. They need to make him a proper babyface, not have him rub me wrong, and they need to not have him take so much offense from guys he should be able to beat in like 10 seconds. If they want to give him squash matches, give him some more squash matches.
Yeah.
But then it just becomes the baby face-ish Lars Sullivan.
Yeah, it's I thought this was the problem that they had with Shinsuke Nakamura when he went to the main roster, and he went and he had a match on his first pay-per-view against Dolph Ziggler that was like 18 minutes long. And everybody was talking about, they were like, what are you complaining about? It's a good match. And I said, yeah, it's a good match, but Dolph is a jobber. He should not get any offense against Shinsuke Nakamura if you want him to be a star. And people are trying to fight. They're like, you can't just call him a jobber. And I go, I can, because he has 4 wins and 16 losses. Dude is a jobber. He should not get 18 minutes against somebody you want to be near the top. So
Get mad at me. Get mad at Vince.
Right. It doesn't matter that it was going to be a good match. We knew it would be a good match, but build the hell out of Dolph Ziggler first in order to have him be slaughtered by somebody like Shinsuke. Then you can really sell him. But Shinsuke had to really work to beat somebody. I remember they did the same thing with Sami Zayn and Stardust. And now you can't imagine Cody being low down on the card, but Stardust was literally the low man on the totem pole. And he got like 10 minutes with Sami Zayn when Sami Zayn was first introduced. And I remember thinking, gosh, that probably didn't do Sami any favors, but yeah, we'll see. Keith, it's early with Keith, and he hasn't been beaten, and it's a work in progress, and people will forgive it if they can still say, well, he is undefeated. So we'll see where they go with that. But yeah, I don't want to belabor that match because the main event is probably going to take up more of our time.
Hey, PW Torch fans, it's Sam Roberts, the last professional broadcaster, here to tell you about my podcast, Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast. Every Thursday morning on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Spotify, on YouTube, notsam.com, wherever you get podcasts, you will find it. Interviews with the A-list of pro wrestling, whether it's Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Roman Reigns, Daniel Bryan, just recently Corey Graves, Mauro Ranallo. They're all guests of Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast, as well as regulars like Dan Soder and one of my favorite people to talk about pro wrestling with, Wade Keller. Plus, every week we do a deep dive and analyze what's going on in the world of pro wrestling this week with the state of wrestling. Bruce Pritchard calls it the best interview in wrestling podcasts. I don't know if that's true, but that's what Bruce Pritchard says. Subscribe now. Get it every Thursday morning across podcast platforms or get the premium version at stitcher.com/notsam.
So we got a Baszler Insane hype video. I took down a couple of notes about this. Baszler selling this match. Gosh, she's so good at being a heel. I love it so much. I love the whole, Kairi didn't beat me. That was my slip up. Like giving your opponent nothing, even after they've beaten you. I love this because this has real life applications. Anytime a heel does this in wrestling, I think about, I go all the way back 14 years to the NBA Western Conference semifinals where my Timberwolves were playing against the Sacramento Kings, and Mike Bibby was kind of their mouthpiece at the time. And any time that the Wolves manhandled them, Bibby would be interviewed at halftime and say, we gave him this, we gave him that, we need to not give him this. He would never acknowledge that the Wolves had ever done something. He would just say it was our fault to give them the chance to get these points and everything like that. And I remember thinking at the time, God, this guy is a perfect heel because he literally won't give the babyface any props for beating them. But I just thought, and I liked Bibby and I liked him for that, actually, even though he was the enemy. But that's what I always go back to. And that to me is, in sports, you see that a lot where the ultra competitive people will always blame themselves, but it comes out so jerkish to somebody who's watching on the outside who's like, why don't you just give some credit to the person against you? But that's not what a character like Shayna should be doing. So anyway,
Shayna and Kairi. No, go ahead and finish.
I was done. I was thrown to you.
Okay. So to me, this is like the total thing that a babyface says. And the reason why I say that is because – and this is just my personal life experiences, right? And part of it is because, you know, I've managed people and I've been a manager and I've been, you know, a technical lead in technical teams and a lot of these situations, right? And there's this kind of mantra – failure is mine, success is ours or yours, right? Depending on your position, right? So like if I'm talking to my team, you know, when we knock it out of the ballpark, it's you guys killed it. When I'm talking to my supervisor, it's us, it's we did a good job. Like even if it was all you, you always give credit to the full team. That's how you do things. And when you fail, it's my fault. It's, you know, the buck stops here. And, you know, like if I'm managing people, I will go out of my way to put the blame on me, at least in public. Like in private, I might pull somebody and say, like, hey, look, dude, you didn't, you know, you show up to the office 3 weeks straight, hungover, and that's why this got late, right? But to my manager, it will be, I take the blame. My team wasn't doing what they were supposed to do. This was my fault. I will learn from this lesson, and I will be sure to manage this team better going forward so that this kind of thing doesn't happen again. That's the way we do things, right? Like that's just how you do things. This is like classic how to run it, how to run something behavior. And so when I see somebody own up and, you know, just own it and say, hey, look, I got overconfident. I underestimated. And in a way, that's a compliment, right? Saying like, look, they're better than I thought they were, right? You're still complimenting. You're saying they're better than I thought they were. But I screwed up. I take the blame. You know, the failure is mine. I failed to do my job. And I'm not going to make that mistake again. And I'm going to succeed next time. Like, that is the total red meat baby face to me from my viewpoint, my vantage point on life. That's total. I'm just like, oh man, Shayna Baszler is going face.
Yeah, that's
because she's not, you know, she's not, you know, to the heel would say it was a fluke, right? Instead of saying like, I screwed up, right? Like, that's the mature thing to say, is I screwed up.
That's such corporate BS. I hate all of it.
It's not corporate BS, dude.
But yes, it is. I've been in the same corporation for 14 years. I know these guys all read the same book about leadership.
But it's different when somebody actually truly means it, right? When they seek out.
Well, I've never known anyone who ever meant it.
You never worked for me.
And Kelly, horrifying.
Kelly, okay, I'm going to put this out there in public. Kelly, I would hire you if you could do the stuff that I need somebody to do. I would hire you.
I don't know what you even do. I don't know. You need people to know a lot about home theater, then hire me. But if not, then, you know, or if you need somebody to create tabletop games for you, because that's what I do. I would get what you were saying, other than the fact that she laid it on so thick and then kept saying, Kyrie, you're nothing. And
well, it's true, because Kyrie's
side of this.
There is no way that anybody could ever kayfabe buy into Kyrie Zane beat a Shayna Baszler unless Shayna Baszler screwed up.
Well, right, but this is pro wrestling. The rules don't apply. Yeah, so
that's
true.
Fine. Rey Mysterio wins matches.
Yeah, right. And, you know, I mean, well, that's, you know, that's real world applications, too, because people, that's the explanation that muscle marks have made over the years. But like the first and one of the biggest stories in UFC was Hoist Gracie. He wasn't nearly the biggest guy they had, but he was extremely technically gifted, and he beat people in what were like literally the most boring matches that UFC was having at the time, because he would just do this trap. But yeah, it didn't have to be the biggest guy, and it never was, as long as he was on top, because he was far from the biggest guy. But this is way off the rails, so to hell with it. Let's get on to Regal and Cassius and Nikki. So Regal and Cassius, I've got one note here that says maybe he's the one that did it. Oh, yeah. Cash is saying maybe he's the one that did it about Matt Riddle. I don't know why I made I think we all agree he's talking about Matt Riddle, right? I mean, I don't know who else he's talking about.
Yeah, he is.
So I don't know why I made a note of that, but that is something he said. And then Nikki came in and said, I know what you did. And that was just a little bit. We've kind of covered that a bit. So do you have anything in particular to add about the Regal and Cassius thing?
I just want to see Cassius Ohno get into a fight with Matt Riddle already.
Yeah, I mean, obviously
they've already sold me on it. Just get to it. Like, stop teasing this.
Yeah, and it's kind of weird that we haven't seen Matt Riddle at all. Like, we haven't even seen any any little packages, like anything. It seems
we
like
saw him at TakeOver.
We saw him putting up his arms and saying, "Hey, it's me." That's it. So nothing much doing there. Okay, we got a little bit of hype for next week's match between Undisputed Era and the War Raiders. That will be next week as part of our double main event, which I always think is extremely stupid because something goes on last and something else doesn't. But if you don't want to hurt the feelings of the people in the one that doesn't go on last, you call it a double or triple main event.
You don't need to hurt. I don't think it'll hurt anybody's feelings if Belair and Cross go on second.
I don't think it will either, nor do I think that it should. I don't know which one will go on last. I guess I don't care.
I'm sure it'll be the title match. It'll be the title match because it's the title match.
Right.
And under any other circumstances, Belair Cross would easily be the last match of the show.
Yeah, it was a weird one to have on the same, given that last week's main event was Lars Sullivan versus EC3.
I know, right?
It's weird because you could have just shoved these matches. Like, you could have had Ricochet Dunn Cole last week. You could have had one of Nikki and Bianca or the UE War Raiders this week. But whatever, they did what they did. And they ruined my birthday last week with Lars Sullivan and EC3. What are you going to do? But anyway, we've got Undisputed Era versus War Raiders next week. They did a little hype video, which I appreciated because this it seems like we got to this match awfully quickly, that we really haven't gotten a real sense of who the War Raiders are. They've given us just a little, but not a whole lot. Not as much as you expect from a team that's about to get a major title match on TV. But we've got that, and we've got Nikki versus Bianca. I'm also going to, before I throw to you, ask read an email from JB that I thought was a good email, and I've got one answer to this. Hello, team. This is JB from Detroit. My question this week is related to best booking decisions for War Games. I am emailing before the show, so we don't know the outcome of the triple threat. What title change do you think would be best for War Games and will have a greater significance on the War Games match itself? The North American title changing hands this week or the tag titles changing hands next week? I think Ricochet and Undisputed Era retaining makes the most sense to prevent any obligatory contractual rematches for War Games and opens up all seven guys involved for the War Games match. Then at TakeOver Phoenix, the War Raiders can end the chase and beat Undisputed Era for the tag titles, and Ricochet can continue his reign or lose to a fresh face. Again, thank you for the great work you provide and the phenomenal show. I am in agreement with you, JB. I think that retaining is the way to go. I do dare say that this week's main event was probably more or less spoiled for me. I was very much looking forward to it, but I got an email. NXT is going to be here in the Twin Cities on December 8th here in St. Paul at the Roy Wilkins Auditorium, where I've seen NXT before, actually, before. It touted some of the people who were going to be there, and it called out North American champion Ricochet. And that doesn't mean they can't call an audible or do a little misdirection, but you just don't see that stuff very often. And considering that this was probably written well after that match was wrestled, it was probably one of those moments where they just called him the North American champion because he is. And so I believed wholeheartedly he was retaining tonight, and then he will probably, instead of defend at that show, he will probably be in the War Games match, because thinking about what he could do in the War Games match is just filling me with glee. As for whether the other one should change hands, I would keep it the same too. I'm a fan of the occasional title change on TV just to keep people on their toes. I love that. It's difficult with a show that's taped three out of four, or it's taped and has been wrestled. All of the matches have been wrestled by the time that it's on TV. I think that's unfortunate, just because it will leak. And sites like ours, like The Torch and like others, will talk about those major title changes. So I like to keep them on live TV if possible. But I wouldn't make that the only criteria for whether a title should change hands or not. I would prefer, in this case, for the chase to go on, because the War Raiders winning too early seems like it would be kind of a flat title change. Having a babyface act that's still kind of just starting to warm up is a little weird to me. So, Justin, what did you think about the title matches changing, or anything changing before we get to War Games?
No, I think this is totally acceptable. The scenarios that you laid out, I agree it's not the right time to make the change. I like things the way they are right now. I would totally be okay leaving the all titles exactly where they are. And we did see tonight, we saw the title staying put on Ricochet, which I think he's carrying it well. I think he's doing a great job. I don't mind seeing that title stay where it is.
support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
Yeah, and, well, let's go straight into the match. So Ricochet, Dunn, Cole went about 20 minutes. I don't know. I think you kind of take rough times on these. I'm not sure, but I think it was
it was 18 and a half.
18 and a half. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, the moment the bell rings, I start a stopwatch, and the moment the bell rings, I stop the stopwatch.
Okay. We got 7 minutes of pre-match, which I wrote down just because I liked that this happened. I like for a title match on TV to have a lot of pomp and circumstance, make it feel like not only like a big fight, but also make it a little more realistic that something could happen, that that something could change hands here. Because of the email I got talking about Ricochet being the champion on December 8th, and maybe he won't be. Maybe they'll do something at War Games, but it just made me that much more sure that Ricochet was going to retain. But I really appreciated the work put into long introductions and then in-ring introductions leading up to, obviously the guys working slow because you knew they were going to go a while, and the large amount of fun little spots they did together. We knew the match was going to be good, and it was. Go ahead with your thoughts, Justin.
No, I really liked this match. I really did.
Yeah, shooting star press into a triangle.
Triangle.
That was the one that I had to write down that loved.
No, was it shooting star press? I thought it was the 630 off the top. Was it shooting star?
I thought it was a shooting star, and I think Morrow called shooting star.
Okay,
and I wonder
it's possible. I mean, I wrote down 630. It was one of those things where, you know, because I'm typing.
Yep.
And I'm bouncing back between, I've got three different windows that I have to deal with. So once in a, you know, I just glance up and he's somersaulting through the air and I didn't catch which direction his body's
going. Sure, Morrow called it as a shooting star press, but it's possible that it was a 630 and miscalled. And that I wrote Morrow down shooting star press because he doesn't make a lot of mistakes. Not a lot. He's like Tanae.
He's not Booker T.
You know that if he calls the name of a move, he's probably right.
The one thing he does that drives me nuts, though, he calls like anything off the top rope, he calls an avalanche whatever, when kind of common usage, at least from what I've seen lately, is to call it a super whatever. Right,
Yeah, the whole super thing has been that's been around for a long time. I'm sure if he calls it an avalanche thing that he got it from somewhere, but I guess I'd be interested to know where he actually got that. But yeah, maybe he got his Mamma Mia chant in this match, well earned, I think.
That Morrow, those fans sure like chanting for him.
Yeah, it's fun.
They sure like
Morrow
his mother.
Brings a lot to the show, right? And
the fans love his mama. Somebody call my mama.
I like Mamma Mia as a chant a lot more than holy shit. I just think it's funnier and it's a nod to the actual brand. I think it just adds a little bit to NXT.
And if I'm Triple H, I'm sitting there saying to myself, you know, these fans like this particular announcer so much that they've turned his catchphrase into a shortcut for "We love this match," which they've never done for any other announcer.
No,
like you've never heard of Vintage Orton.
Yeah, right. You never on WCW had "We Gotta Go." As a chant for Tony Schiavone. I don't know, like, who else even has like that statement? One of my daughters loves the shucky ducky quack quack moment.
That was always
she's 10 years old. She thinks it's just the best thing ever.
Shucky ducky quack quack was his version of puppies.
Oh boy!
You remember that? He'd be like, "Oh, shucky ducky, quack quack."
Is that really where that started?
Yeah, that was Booker T. It was his hubba hubba.
Oh man, what a weird way to say that. That's probably the most innocent way an adult male could yell out something about thinking something's hot that I can think of. So much better than the overt stuff they were doing in the late 90s that was kind of embarrassing to be seen watching. Yeah.
Getting Jerry Waller off the air was a big improvement in my mind.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But now, yeah, at least when Graves does it, it's only for one specific person.
Yeah, it's one specific person, and he also doesn't do it in, like,
a dirty way.
A sad way. It's never sad when he does
it. Part of it's because he's, like, he's younger than me. Jerry Waller is, like, old enough to be my father.
Right. Yeah,
Yeah, it's like it's a 70-year-old guy going on and on about a 23-year-old woman. No, gross.
Right. Yeah, it's like, we're all thinking it. You don't have to yell it out there, Gramps. Anyway, I got an email from Kevin Catani. Salutations, gents. I've realized that not being able to watch NXT along with you makes my emails a bit stale. That said, I will work to get better. As one of the few regular fans of 205 Live, I was really excited to see the premier athlete on the show. With Leo Rush showing up on Raw and Tony Nese making a presumed short-term appearance on NXT, do you all think there will be more of a cross-promotion of this type? And if yes, is that more of a measure of 205 Live's decline or a real effort to showcase these talented performers on other platforms? Thanks as always, the Professor. So obviously he sent this after last week with that really quite nice match between Nese and Gargano. Nice if a, you know, foregone conclusion that it was going to end the way it did. I think that there will be some cross promotion. I know we talked about this last week. We don't want there to be, or maybe this was something we talked about on Twitter. Yeah, this was,
it was a Twitter conversation.
Yeah, this was a Twitter conversation. So we were talking about the fact that we think there could be cross promotion, but if there's a lot of cross promotion, then why not just make it 1 2-hour show?
Yes.
And I think that was you actually, Justin, who actually said that.
That's not quite the way I put it. I said, if there's a lot of cross promotion, then it is effectively a 2-hour show. I didn't say you might as well, because I'm pretty sure I am team. I'm pretty sure I'm on the record as being team. No, please don't go 2 hours.
Okay. Yeah, if you have a larger roster, then you can go 2 hours. But I feel like an hour is the right amount of time for a show like NXT that's meant to showcase new talent, that's meant to be hot and fresh all the time. And if you're 2 hours a week, every week,
I'm gonna get
less
sick of Tommaso Ciampa
because everyone,
mm-hmm. Can you imagine, like as much of a raging love affair that everyone on this show and all of our listeners have with Velveteen Dream?
Yep.
I love Haagen-Dazs cherry vanilla ice cream. I love it. Last week, I sat down and I ate an entire pint of Haagen-Dazs cherry vanilla ice cream, and it was good, and it was dirty.
You're way too close to the microphone right now.
But you know what? Yeah, that's part of the creepiness of it, right?
Like those
pops and stuff. I know.
Yep.
And I'm totally Nikki Cross for Haagen-Dazs cherry vanilla.
Yep.
But if I ate that stuff every week, it would be like 2 months before I got sick of it. And if I saw Velveteen Dream on my screen as often as I would if we were seeing 2 hours of NXT every week, I get real sick of Velveteen Dream. I get real sick of Tommaso Ciampa. You thought that we were tired of Aleister Black's promos once he had a second one? Imagine him cutting a promo every other week.
Right.
That's what you get with a 2-hour NXT. And that's what you get if there's a lot of cross promotion. Actually, with a lot of cross promotion, it's going to get worse. Because if they're cross promoting a lot, then they're not even wrestling. They're interrupting each other's promos. They're showing up. God help me, they're going to have an invasion angle.
Yeah, those have always gone well. You know, if the invasion happens when one company is in control of them and has been in control of them, it might work. But the invasion angle has never worked when they were actually separate companies. So
yeah,
it would be interesting. It would be like the first invasion angle to have the possibility for success. Now, granted, Invasion 2001 was the highest, it did a larger number of buys than any pay-per-view in history other than the Big Four. That's true. It did crazy numbers. And it didn't even have a lot of WCW's biggest stars, but it was a big, big deal at the time. So,
but nobody's got an invasion angle right since.
Yeah, and it didn't. And that one wasn't even done super well. That show was good, and the lead up to it was okay, and the follow through was not great because they ended up pushing all their own people, and they did not really make. They didn't really let anyone make inroads. Even the guys that really had good matches on that show.
Everyone I know,
2001 is a good show, but it didn't. Yeah.
Everyone I know who was a really big fan of WCW at that time got so turned off to the WWE product because they said Vince is just going to squash all the guys I like, and they were grateful that Sting didn't come. I've talked to a bunch of people who are WCW fans at that era. And also, I'm so grateful Sting didn't go to WWE because you look at how the rest of the WCW roster was treated after Invasion. Like, why would I want to see Sting, who's the icon? Why would I want to see him just squashed?
Yeah, it was probably better for him, and he probably had a better career for having not done that. To be honest, and
honestly, he would have had a lot of great matches.
Yeah, he would have made a lot of he would have had a lot of great and important matches, but who knows how he would have been treated. I have no qualms about what happened with Sting. I mean, he did get injured the way he did, so that's too bad. But otherwise, I don't have a lot of issues with that. Now, Kevin Kidani, we are totally off the rails here as far as what you talked about. But I think we will see some cross-promotion. I would be shocked if we didn't. And it makes sense because these guys can be a little bit fresh on one show or the other. And if you do a little cross-promotion, then somebody who's only watching one or the other might have some excuse to watch the other. And that I know is going to be the goal going forward because the type of person who really likes NXT for being a good wrestling show would like 205 Live for being the same thing. So we've talked a little bit on this show about what 205 Live could do. I've actually watched a ton of it lately. I'd fallen something like 4 months behind. And in the last 3 days, I think I've watched about 12 hours of it. I've watched a lot of 205 Live. And
that's actually a heck of an endorsement.
When you do that much of it at once, it can feel a little samey just because it's a small roster. But there's so much going on there. There's so much fun. Leo Rush is dynamite. I love him so much.
I asked somebody on Facebook yesterday if people actually still say the word dynamite. Prompted
I say it all the time.
Prompted by the president using that word in reference to his daughter. And I was seeing myself like, and I said, like, who says dynamite anymore? But now I know the answer to that.
Yeah. Oh, I say it a lot. I, you know what? I tweet it a lot. So you've probably seen me say it. I say it more in print than I do out loud. So
I'm not Tom. I don't read Twitter that much.
No, that's true. Tom is always the first person to like every one of my tweets. I don't know what he does in life, but he can't do much of it because he's always able to like every tweet that I make, like almost immediately and respond to them. It's impressive. It's almost scary, actually.
90% of my Twitter activity is in response to a notification that basically says, Tom Staup liked this. So it brings something to my attention. I'll look at it and I'm like, oh, I should like that too. And I'll like it.
Yep.
And then he'll like my response, and then he'll respond, and then somebody else will respond, and the next thing I know I'm on Twitter, which is something I vowed to never do.
He'll like things that he doesn't like just because it seems like more of an acknowledgement that he's read it.
I do the same thing on Facebook.
Yeah, I don't. I'm stingy with them. If you get a like from me, then I really liked it. Yep, it's important. It's important to me, gang. So anyway, I think that's our show. It wasn't overly long or anything like that because there weren't a lot of segments, but we found some stuff to talk about. So that is that's NXT. Next week we've got our double main event, Undisputed
Era. Double main event.
Raiders and Nikki Cross versus Bianca Belair, and maybe we'll get the payoff to this Aleister Black saga. It will also be a two-man booth next week because Tom is going to be off doing doing the tapings, right? So so that's what we get. It's going to be whatever he's doing next week. It's not this. It's going to be me and Justin again. So hopefully you could stomach the two of us who typically work a little heelish being the only two here. But that's what we got for you, gang. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me on Twitter at Spooky Milk. Justin?
I'm Justin _M_James at Twitter.
All right, and we will see you next week, and we love you for all the support. See you, Torch Faithful.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free additions to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership, and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell Audio Show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer. And there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip. Live!